Daniel Hagee is widely recognized as one of America's finest conductors, earning critical acclaim for his fresh interpretations of the standard repertoire and for his commitment to creative programming. He served for 11 seasons as the music director of the Syracuse Symphony, and in June 2009 was appointed music director of the Wichita Symphony, beginning his tenure with that orchestra in September 2010. He will be the guest conductor for this weekend's Albany Symphony Concert at the Palace in Albany. Concert takes place Saturday night, December 1st, and Hagee will conduct Beethoven's iconic Fifth Symphony, and it's a great pleasure to welcome him to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks. Great to be here, Joe.
It is. It's wonderful to have you here. What is it like to be the life of a guest conductor of that position?
Well, I do both. I have my own orchestra, Wichita, right, as you mentioned, and then I do many weeks as guest conductor. It's very exciting, quite honestly. I mean, I get to work with fantastic musicians everywhere I go and doing different repertoire. Every orchestra seems to have a certain kind of personality, and this, I have to say, this orchestra has just been delightful. Just fantastic to work with.
How soon can you tell that personality?
Almost the minute you walk in the room. You know, when you walk in, you can just kind of sense how people are, how they're working on things. And of course, right from the downbeat, the kind of respect that they pay toward the music, which I found immediate here.
And it's also a sound, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And I find that fascinating. You have a set number of musicians. They will come, they will go. But there is that direction, that repertoire that gives it a sound.
That's right. I would say orchestras that perform together a lot, like the Albany Symphony and many of the other orchestras that I conduct, they play together quite a bit. And so they get used to a certain kind of sound. They get used to adapting in a certain way to the hall, to their own setup, and to individuals around them. And they form a certain kind of unique bond that happens in the sound, which is very telling right from the beginning.
So when you come in, and the answer can be both, but when you come in, do you have to adapt to them or do they have to adapt to you?
Well, I come in with a certain sound that I want in my mind, and I just start to try to achieve that the best I can. Now, that's not to say that I want to change every single thing. If someone plays a solo line and I think, wow, that's beautiful, and it's different than how I had conceived it, but I really like it, I'll take that. I think there's a point when one is working with an orchestra where the artistry of the performer, especially if it's a solo part, they might actually demonstrate something that's really wonderful. I remember Schulte, the great conductor, was saying that when he was conducting the Vienna Philharmonic, he said, why would I tell them how to play everything? I could learn so much from how they play. And I thought that was a wonderfully humble comment to make. And I think conductors need to realize that they are musicians along with the musicians that are helping sculpt the piece and bring a unified vision to it. And of course, that's what I start to do right away. But I also like to listen and make some adaptations as well. But it's a very subtle kind of thing. I think that the conductor has to be kind of a spiritual leader and have the vision for the piece and has to be able to convince everyone else that that vision is something we should all be unified to achieve.
The concert is tomorrow night. You came in yesterday. You had two rehearsals. You'll have two more today.
Mm-hmm.
Do you go home, you know, did you go back last night and say, okay, this is where we are and this is where I want to be? Is that a conscious discussion
that you
have with yourself?
That's a good question. It actually takes place on its own. I mean, I find myself kind of ruminating over what has occurred already, and I remember little things that I think, okay, yeah, that's something else we need to take a look at. This has to be chiseled a little bit more here and there. But that kind of happens on its own. So when I look at the score again, I remember, oh yeah, this, the other
right thing.
Especially with repertoire that's familiar to me, then I just know what I think the orchestra will feel most comfortable going over again. That's another objective that a conductor has to have, is the musicians have to feel comfortable going into the performance and at ease, so that they can actually do something spontaneously and do other things that they know they can predict. And so that's my job, is to help them feel as comfortable as possible and to create an environment that's easiest for them to express themselves.
You cited a wonderful quote a moment ago about learning from that orchestra, but I assume they learned from you as well. It's different than you know, a substitute teacher where, you know, they're all going, oh, good, David's gone. We get the day off today.
Well, I think any time that, you know, someone else comes in and works with an orchestra, they come in, they have a different approach, just because even if you tried to emulate the music director who's there most of the time, it wouldn't be possible. There, you always end up sharing your personality somehow, even if you're trying to be absolutely neutral. So, the musicians are a big part of that, how they work, how they enjoy working. And that's the one thing I really noticed, is that the musicians really enjoy working on the detail. And that's something that I want to bring out in all the pieces.
Do you come in with the repertoire set?
Yeah, it's been set a long time ago, and it's usually after discussions I've had with the management and staff of the orchestra.
Okay. So, I mean, you already know, they tell you what you'll be conducting as opposed to, this is what I would like to do.
Well, actually, I had the conversations with David in this particular case about what they need on their season and the general things that you talk about, instrumentation needs, the kind of works that haven't been performed yet that need to be performed, how to make a balanced program within itself that also has a good seasonal mix for them. And we just exchange ideas until we come up with something that we both really feel good about.
You are, as I mentioned in the introduction, doing Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, iconic. What is it like to conduct a piece of work like that that is so ingrained in our cultural consciousness?
Well, I think it's incredibly exciting. It is incredibly exciting. Of course, it's very well known. It's a very popularized work. But for me, I think every time I look at the score, I find it so fresh. I look at it again as though it's a premiere, really. I mean, I look at it and say, okay, what else can we really lift out of the score that Beethoven actually wrote here, rather than copy any other kind of interpretations? I mean, there are certain things that end up being, of course, similar because you do have certain objective parts of the music, like the pitches that are written, the rhythms that are written. And to some degree, the tempos, although those in Beethoven are always kind of up for grabs. And also a style of playing, whether you're going to go to the current performance practice style or more romanticized style. But I approach it just from the notes on the page. This is what Beethoven has left behind. And you try to find the truth in that.
You will also be doing the Mozart clarinet concerto. As I mentioned, David Schifrin is the clarinetist who will be on stage with you tomorrow night. And you've met up with him?
Yes.
And what is that, how is that going?
Oh, it's marvelous. I've worked with David before, and I've invited him to the Wichita Symphony as well. I worked with him years ago, the Eugene Symphony. We collaborated on Nielsen Concerto. So I knew David already going into this. And I also knew that I was going to be in for a real treat to get to work with someone of his stature and his artistry. And we got together before the rehearsal to talk through the piece a little bit. And he played a few things to show me some of his ideas that where we really have to be together ensemble-wise. And then we just started rehearsing, and it was just a joy. I mean, this man is a marvelous artist. The way he sounds, his sound on the clarinet is just incredible. It will take your breath away, quite honestly. But he's also a chamber musician. He listens to the orchestra and plays with them like chamber music. And he knows how to project in the most pianissimo, quiet passages. I mean, all these things of a great veteran performer.
What is your instrument?
Oboe.
Oboe.
Oboe was, and I say former at this point, because it's been years since I've done it. So I use the piano now as a tool, actually, to learn the scores.
What was there about what have you been able to pinpoint what it was about the oboe that drew you in initially?
Yes, it was the sound. It was the sound and the role that it played in the orchestra, just in terms of the solos and that kind of thing, and also chamber music. And that was, I thought it was just a rich instrument. Of course, when I got more deeply involved with it, I realized how much time it took to make reeds. And that ended up being a deterrent for me later on when conducting took up so much of my time.
Yeah, it's all about the paperwork. Ancillary stuff.
Yeah, the things for double reed, you know, players that a lot of other people don't understand is that you're actually making part of your instrument on a daily basis. I mean, you don't pop a mouthpiece in and start playing. I mean, you're working on these things every day.
You're a musician and a craftsman.
And even when you're working your reeds, you haven't really begun the practicing, the actual work of playing. So it was great, but once I started conducting, and that was right out of graduate school, I was pretty much full-time doing that, and there just wasn't time to turn to the oboe very much, especially with the reed making and everything else, and the musculature that has to be maintained in the embouchure is very difficult to keep up. So I really switched my attention to playing the piano a lot, sight reading and score reading and that kind of thing, and that became very useful.
I've talked to David Allen Miller a lot about this, and I'm curious about your take on it, of what it takes to be a good conductor. What do you think the ingredients are to be a good conductor?
Well, I think you certainly have to have a personality for it. You really are working with people. And so you have to know how you can best coach them to get the best out of them, to elicit their very best. You want to get them to put their best foot forward, because when they want to sound great, they usually can. So that's one major ingredient. But of course, there are other basic technical things that you have to be able to do. One is read a score. And that just takes training and lots of hours, lots of time. And you also have to have a certain physical technique to be able to communicate non-verbally. You also have to be able to communicate verbally, but it's most important, especially with, I think, professional orchestras, that you can show the things that you want to have happen, because that's all there is in the performance as well. So
is that an eyebrow? What is that? Wait, non-brow? Is that an eyebrow up, a furrowed brow? What is that?
I think it has to be something that speaks from deep within, and however that manifests itself, then it'll be very sincere. I think if you think, well, I'll do my eyebrow like this at this point, and then I'll move my left ear at this point.
But I mean, is there a global communication? I mean, like, if you wince, then people know that that you are struggling with something.
Right.
I assume.
Yeah, wincing's not a good idea. I think at any point, but there is a kind of universal technique, textbook style, for how the gestures are done. That is showing which beat you are in each bar, in each measure, so that people kind of really know where they're supposed to be, just to organize each measure. But after that, it's pretty much up for grabs. You see pretty wildly different kind of styles up there. I mean, the basic things are you face the orchestra, and then you conduct in a way that's clear rhythmically for them. And from that point on, it's just a matter of gradation as to which conductors can also show the kind of, not just when to play, but how to play, and how to unify the product in such a way that it encourages people to listen and really have a great vision that you can all do together.
Joan Towers, Made in America, Mozart's Clarinet Concerto and Beethoven's Symphony No. 5, all in the program tomorrow night at 7:30 at the Palace Theater. Daniel Hagee is the guest conductor and will be on hand, and it is going to be quite an evening. You can find out more information by going to albanysymphony.com, albanysymphony.com. Daniel, a great pleasure. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joe. It's a pleasure.
Enjoyed it. Again, you can find out more information about tomorrow's performance at 7:30 at the Palace Theater in Albany, albanysymphony.com. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.